Canon Press presents Table Grace, a lady seminar at the Grace Agenda 2013 conference featuring Nancy Wilson, Becca Merkel, Rachel Jankovic, and Heather Wilson. Sponsored by Christ Church, Moscow, Idaho. Copyright 2013. Thank you for listening to Table Grace.
It's so funny, I know so many of you, and yet I'm still petrified to get up here and talk at you. So I love this. No natural flair. So before I get started on talking about our home base and how, you know, what role food plays at our house, I thought I'd give you a little bit about my personal history with food and cooking. I grew up in a house full of good food. My mom catered and cooked a lot. Lots of feasting, lots of hospitality. I did my share of chopping and peeling and prepping and dishes. But unlike many of you and some of my family here, as a subject, as a hobby, as an activity, food and cooking did not interest me much. And this is despite growing up in the house full of good food and living with roommates after that who are always cooking something or other. Just to demonstrate this, I lived on my own after high school for about 8 years or so, and I can't even remember cooking anything. I worked at a pizza place, so I made a mean pizza. But beyond that, I can't remember what I would eat for breakfast. I know I never made dinners. I'd go out on occasion, I'd go to my parents' house for food. And I'm sure I ate, because I'm here. But really, 8 years of not, it played that little of a part. It didn't interest me. And why would it at that time? I had no people to feed, and I was more interested in spending my day doing other things. It was just a necessary part of existing. So when you fast forward the clock, and I'm 26 and newly married to a large, hungry fellow from Idaho, coming from a meat-eating family, I didn't even know that dinner wasn't dinner without meat. I don't think I'd ever eaten a whole steak, let alone cooked one. I was out of my skill set, but off to the races anyways. Fast forward the clock a little more, and I find myself with a passel of hungry children. Well, needless to say, I've had to learn a few things and given thought along the way to what it is we're trying to do at our home and do at our table. So the first thing, what is food for? At a fundamental level, on a primary level, food is sustenance. Food is grace. In like grace, food is fuel. It sustains you, energizes you, empowers you for the next couple hours of living. And that's the funny bit. We can't just eat once for the day or feed our people once a day. It doesn't work. They keep getting hungry. And then they grow and they're hungrier sooner, needing more. So why did God make us with a need to eat so often? He could have done it differently, but he didn't. We all have the need to be filled, the need to reload, at regular intervals in the day, in fact, in order to accomplish the tasks and goals in front of us. We're fuel inefficient creatures, and yet he gives us grace. He gives us food. It's a beautiful picture. This dependency, this frequent need of something outside ourselves. But the neat trick is that God didn't just make us to need food. He gave us taste and then made an abundance of flavors. Honeycrisp apples, peanut butter cups, watermelon, cheeses galore, curries, vanilla, chocolate, basil, ballpark hot dogs, and Texas barbecue. The list could go on, and it's awesome. God didn't make it simply a necessary task. Like so many other gifts, he made it fun and enjoyable and at times surprising. So from the subject of food, we go to the task of cooking. Cooking for the love of cooking or cooking for the love of people? Speaking for myself, I cook because otherwise my people would die. It's that simple. It is my job. They need to eat. And as beautiful as food can be, we've all seen the pictures, or maybe made some pretty things. I don't cook because it's beautiful. I cook because I love my family. I love the hungry people God gave me. And our meals together are like little Sabbaths, points of rest, following work that's been done, in anticipation of work that lies ahead. It's refreshment so you and your family can attack the next bit of day, whether it's a kid just playing, or going to school, or actual labor. So if meals are a Sabbath, are a picture of the Sabbath, the next question is how do we make sure those Sabbaths are made for man and not man for the Sabbaths? How do we serve as grace in our families to make our meals pictures of the Lord's table. The first thing is simple fare does not mean shallow grace. You can't get more simple than bread and wine. Don't be a snob about what you put out. It's not about always aiming low, but remembering that the simple meal offered with joy will better serve everyone than something with the high level of difficulty where the preparation was full of stress that leaves its mark on the family and or your guests. Family meals create moments for children to commune with parents and parents with their children, especially fathers. We can create a space for relating to each other in a natural environment. The dinner hour for us serves as a great time to check in with one another, hearing stories from the day, practice our conversational skills, loving through listening. And it's a time for us to enjoy our children or the people God's brought into your life. Other people do this at breakfast. Other people, you know, have their big weekend meals. But it's just a great time for us to learn to be with each other. So I've spoken a little about the practical role food plays, just sustenance. Does this mean I don't care or we shouldn't care at all about the execution or artistry? Nope. I believe we should care as much as is possible in the moment and in the situation. A burned pancake can provide as much sustenance as a perfect one, but not as kind. Artistry in food can be a kindness. Doesn't take much effort to watch that pancake, to make the food presentable, to think about colors. I mean, it's not just about potential energy. It can be as simple as cutting off crusts for your toddler because you know they enjoy it that way, or a complex birthday request, which even I have been known to do, especially with cakes. I don't know why they keep doing this to me. But making something they love, even though it's harder on you and you're busy. The point is that it's all service, and it's 100% about the people you're serving. On the flip, when does artistry in food become a cruelty to the people you're feeding? Think about it. Extra flair at times can be more about you than the people at your table, especially with kids. Remember their frames. Everyone has their way of teaching kids how to eat, about the wide range of food, tastes, and flavors that God has created for us. But keep in mind the primary role of food as grace to your people, especially in their daily consumption of it. Introduce new things in a way that's kind, impatient. Don't forego old family favorites when you tire of them, when it's their favorite as well. You know, just for a personal example, when my kids were really young, I couldn't understand why they didn't like spaghetti. Who doesn't like spaghetti? It's like, even for me, it's the most basic thing. But then I knew I loved an interesting full-bodied sauce, and somehow that wasn't working for them. So at Nate's suggestion, I downgraded the quality, got the jar of Ragu, and all of a sudden spaghetti became a joy. And it's that way with lots of things. Little changes can go far into just teaching our kids to enjoy that time together. Every meal doesn't have to be a lesson. Boring for you could be great excitement for them, but who is this about anyways? Our maternal selfishness can so often ruin a meal. Serving is fundamentally a humble position to be in, and when we cook to keep ourselves entertained without regard for our actual guests, when we're demanding thanks, when we cook for our own waistline and leave the rest of our family hungry, when we're stressed, flustered in preparation and service, what kind of picture is this? Think about blessing them. So now here's a few more practical notes. How do we make sure that meals fuel busy lives and souls and they don't obstruct them? Once again, Sabbath is made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Busy people are harder to serve, but demanding they stop being busy isn't serving them at all. And we definitely notice this as kids get older. But at the same time, if you have kids who want to be missing meals just for recreational evenings, take off, not be there. Counter by making your family meals a joy instead of making them the rule. Think about them and what they love and create excitement about wanting to be there for it. Carving out time for family communion around the table is a grace to your people. And as kids get older, and we're in the thick of this right now, we realize there's a higher level of difficulty. But we still can attempt to feed all the people that God gave us as best as we can, whatever the situation, and be willing for us to be the ones to be flexible, to adapt and to shift. Make things they love when you can all sit down. Create familial anticipation for coming together. I'm sure everybody here has experienced when kids walk in the door and are excited about the smell of what's in the oven. They recognize it when you didn't even smell it. You've been around it so often. And when you're in a busy place, make sure you can anticipate their needs and schedules. So as far as we go, I've got tips on how we anticipate the hectic swirl of big family life and continue to try to love and serve the kids with food, even on the run. When we have game nights, which happens sometimes, 4 or 5 nights a week of running to games, we wrap burritos, make a stack of calzones to go, do giant French bread sandwiches, ready to cut. You get the idea. Know when people are going to be running and be prepared with easy standbys that you can pass back in the car or eat in the bleachers or pack for the team bus. You can still love them. You can still show your love to them, even when you aren't able to sit down together. And another thing is being flexible to eating times. It doesn't have to be every night at 6:30 on the dot. I know we'll be the super early eaters, and the Merkels will be the super late eaters. But just carving out times when you can spend it together, even if it's, not the ideal schedule for you. So what are the biggest mistakes that some of you, can make about food when it comes to your family? One I've touched on already a bit is putting food above people, a piece of art that doesn't actually feed anyone, or something full of nutrition, but something that nobody actually enjoys. This ties into the second, which is putting ourselves above people. Our tastes, our scruples, our diet. My husband has referred to this kind of cook as the high priestess of nutrition, where it's all about the law of food and not the grace of food. And this is something we've actually seen a bit, which is don't turn your husbands or your kids into cheaters, where they have to sneak the burger, sneak the treat. And it can be a funny joke, running off to drive through Mickey D's on the way home to dinner, hiding candy that you buy at the store. Most of us have known people like that or been a person like that. But in all seriousness, you don't need to cultivate dishonesty with the people you love. And if they leave the table hungry, they leave the table dissatisfied, they will look for elsewhere. They will look elsewhere to be filled. Another mistake that's easy to make, whether a mom or just a person doing a lot of entertaining, is playing the victim. Doesn't everyone see how much I've slaved over this? Where is the praise? We easily forget that the goal of giving isn't the thank you, but the giving itself. Gratitude is important to teach your kids, but can be a real buzzkill when it's demanded. When everybody's having good fellowship and fun over the table, enjoying the gift that you gave to them, don't wreck the moment. Don't take away that gift of communion by standing there, scowling, waiting. Imagine the deacon or elder giving you the plate of bread and then stopping you, demanding a please, waiting again for the thank you before you pass it on. So we do try to cultivate gratitude in the kids. And we do this at the table. But also, keep it lighthearted. Teach politeness. It's something we talk about, not something we demand. We wouldn't want God to do that to us. So, final takeaways. In all you do at your table, be selfless. Be empowering. Be serving. Be kindness and be grace. When showing hospitality towards your family and towards others, make it easy. Make it joyful for the people you serve. And one thing is I spend a lot of time really trying to learn from others who do this. You know, people are constantly serving us, and it's really good to take note and see how you can incorporate that into your own life. When I was traveling, for instance, a lot, especially in Latin America and South America, I was always so surprised how much you always felt welcomed in. It didn't matter that you weren't invited. It didn't matter. Somebody would want to bring you along as the third wheel or the third and fourth wheel. And you know, a very American of me, no. I don't want to impose. I'm like, no. They would hate it if you knew, if I came and I didn't bring you. You've been my guest. And that really just struck me as like always never making somebody feel unwanted, like they've stayed their time. Always having more, having extra, being ready to serve. And then another thing is people constantly having, you know, we've got the big family, people's willingness to invite us over and serve us takeout with a salad. And for me, it's like, I think, I can't have people over, you know, I want to give my best. And to realize your best is often you. And, you know, that's something like these are, I'm talking about these things, that we've been working on, but there are things I'm still learning, and I'm still learning from those and many of you around me. It's like being able to be invited in and served, and I'm not thinking about the fact of, I would never have served somebody a Winko pizza. I'm thinking, I can't believe how kind they're having us and five children over, and having a willingness to do that yourself, where, yes, you want to serve somebody the artistic, beautiful meal, but actually sometimes you just need to open your home with what you have, if it means running out to the store and picking something up. And focus, make your table a little pretty, like one thing of flowers. And so being willing to learn, being willing to serve, and it is a true picture. And it's something that, you know, we're constantly learning from those around us. And as we learn and as we talk to our children around, they're learning. They're learning from our example. There we go. That's what I have to say.